Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Children's Story of a Quantum Mechanical Atom. Now, I'm in the middle of writing a research paper in which somehow I've stumbled across building these clear plastic boxes, some with some fun inside, some with quantum mechanics, some with a breakout kit which teaches advanced, technology, advanced sensing use in laboratories. It has a range of sensors, so you can see what happens when you boil water, do acid titration, heat things up, see where the heat flows and stuff like that. So I've got that up, and there's the issue that the actual it's all very well, I've pointed out, that we have sensors that people can discuss and talk, and they can describe it, but in general it gets so far but not far enough, in that people who give explanations back in the old school way of thinking, where they have they wish they could do science without doing any maths, and they have basically a stream of consciousness way of describing everything, and their world begins that the only difference with atoms from your normal fruit and veg or whatever, any circular things with spheres, which is the largest, is the general thing you have around, is that they are they're smaller. And of course this is slightly or very much a different world when you get down to the small world. And there's a combination of social trauma going in with it. It's not that these people, it's not a process of benign self-deception. It's anywhere but benign, because as you scratch away the surface, there's a whole lot of human anger, human failing with almost everything that you encounter in your sort of murder mysteries. I've just been watching Midsummer Murders. There's always amount of self-deception and a decision to do something incredibly wrong. And this is true with our science education, in that we have missed the major point that when things get smaller, they get very, very different. So that's given me sort of a little bit of an idea of how you do these sorts of things. And so I've got a general idea. So let's start off. As I spoke there, I thought, I better do something about the scale of these things. And there is a magical rainforest, and it's one of these special things in that I had an interruption there with someone else, not podcasting, but having a FaceTime talk, and unfortunately you'll hear the occasional truck going past as I'm walking while I'm podcasting. But so let's start the story now. There's a rainforest, and what you have to understand is that there's rainforests, big rainforests, but as you go down to the size of your grass, you're sitting in the lawn, you can see almost a miniature rainforest in the grass understory. And if you keep on going down that grass, if you look at on the edge of a blade of grass or underneath, there'll be another entire plant kingdom. And in this particular plant kingdom, far, far away in the middle of an actual big rainforest, was a small patch of basically grass and lawn, and in that small patch of grass and lawn was a miniature rainforest. And this is a story of two birds. Now, it's a story anyway, so we normally don't have small birds, but in this story we'll have two small birds, and we'll call one bird George, and the other one, I want a nice feminine name, I suppose, Viola. George and Viola. We'll change those names later on. And they were two birds, very much in love, and they want to have a family. And George and Viola had this idea, but there was not much in this small rainforest, not a place to have a nest or anything like that. And so George and Viola talked, or you know, flew about the place, and there was this idea of saying that they wanted a large family of nano-vultures, I'll call them, nano-vultures around. These are very tiny, tiny vultures, and they flew around the place, and they spoke, and George said to Viola, you know, it's about time that we're not getting any younger, let's start up a large family, a big family. And Viola said, well, how big? And George wasn't too good with numbers, and he had heard lots of numbers. He didn't actually know numbers, and he said, two nanovultures. We want to have two nanovultures. Viola was a bit, you know, thinking, well, surely we could have more. We're going to be a bit lonely with that. Now George hadn't heard too much and about numbers, and so he said, 18. And Viola thought, oh, that's an awful lot. Viola said, look, I'm going to have a nest. Prepare me a nest if I'm going to have that many nano vultures. And George really didn't know. And George flew about the place picking up little nano twigs and stuff like that. And in this was a tiny little pebble, and on top of this pebble, George built this nest. He worked very, very, very hard and measured it up so it would fit a nanovulture egg. Now, nanovulture eggs are rather special because they're so small, they don't have any shells. And this is because shells can break easily, and having no shells, they've got it's a pretty amazing thing. They've got no inside, because there's no inside of a shell, and no outside of a shell. In fact, they're these special eggs, and they slowly start to begin in this rather fuzzy way, and then finish, and then when they're in the very centre, they're the most there, and they glide away. So if you saw one of these eggs, that'd be like a ghost. You know how you can put your hand through a ghost? It's like one of these nanovulture eggs. And he measured the first one up and made sure the nest was... he knew how big one of these eggs was, and he made the nest big. And Viola said, oh, how's the nest going, George? George said, look, it's going okay. I've just a few more days' work. And meantime, Viola was getting rather big because she had 18 nanovulture eggs to lay because, you know, she was good and they wanted a big family of nanovulture eggs. And then finally, sort of a day before it was egg laying day, Viola flew up to the nest and said, Oh, George, that nest is only big enough for one of my big nano vulture eggs. Now, you've got to remember that nano vulture eggs are very light, very soft and light and big and fuzzy, so to speak. They don't have a shell, I've told you that, and they don't have an inside or an outside. They've only just got basically existence. They're beautiful eggs, and they're so small that they've got no parts to it. They're just beautiful, beautiful eggs. And there's two types of eggs. There's a pink egg and a blue egg. And you might say, "Oh, I know," but you'd be wrong, because the blue eggs are for girl nanovultures, and the pink eggs are for boy nanovultures. And there's this thing, there's this excitement, what are the colour eggs are, and 18 eggs. But Viola says, "Look, there's not going to be enough room. You'll have to get the magic micro crystal rock." And George said, "Oh, I have to fly there. They're really hard to get, though. They're really small and heavy little nanovulture. So these micro crystals, and they're very, very heavy. And I don't know whether I can get one." And she said, "Look, you have to get one, because we're going to have that get one of those to weigh these fluffy eggs down." And George was a bit concerned, because how can you weigh something down if it hasn't got a surface? It just slowly is gradually begins, goes to a maximum, and then fades away. So how can you possibly get something to weigh it down? And the trick was that all the nanovultures knew that these nanovultures, very heavy nanovulture crystals, they pick up, they're tiny little pebbles and jewels they pick up, they can float to the center of the egg and act as a weight to hold it down. And that's because they don't have an inside or an outside. They don't have a surface. They've got a general smooth fuzziness, like a ghost grow in. And this little crystal can float to the center, sit in the center. It gets sucked into the center and adds weight to it, so it sits firmly in the nest. And Viola said, "Look, you've got to have one heavy enough to hold in 17 eggs." And George thought, "Oh, 17, that's a bit different from 18. Oh, but Viola probably knows what she's talking about." So by and by, he flew around the place and he found a little one thing, and so with his bill, he had a big toucan bill. So there's a vulture, if you can imagine, with a brightly coloured bill, and he picked one up, and it was quite heavy, and he flew up, and he realised one Viola would know that it was one, it's not good enough. And so he flew around, flew down, and found one of these little pebbles on the rainforest floor, and flew up with 17 one, and it was heavy enough to hold down 17 eggs. Now it came to the great morning, whole day's work. Viola was going to lay 17 eggs and fit them, all 17 eggs, into one nest, which was big enough to hold one. And the big issue was, how is that going to happen? And so she with a lot of quack, quack, laid the first nanovulture egg, and it was a beautiful one. It was a blue egg, and George said, "Hurrah, hurrah, a boy!" And Viola said, "No, it's going to be a girl egg." And it sat there. And beautiful, and you know, there's a bit of wind blowing, so George got this nanovulture crystal that's very small. I can hardly see the crystal, and he threw it onto the egg, and it nearly fell right through the egg. Then it began to bounce up in the middle of the egg, and it held that egg securely in there. But it was for 17, and George felt a bit sort of, "Oh, I've only built the egg, the nest big enough for one egg. I wonder what's going to happen next." And then Viola laid the next egg, it was a pink one, and George said, "Hurrah, hurrah, at last, a girl." He thought, and then Viola said, "Oh dear, blue is girls, pink is boys, it's a boy." And this miraculous things happened. Because the eggs don't have shells, and they don't have surfaces, and they don't have an inside or outside, because there's nothing to be inside a shell. They just start from forever, very thinly, and build up to the centre. The two eggs fell in through each other, like these ghosts. They just slid one inside the other, and both held down by the nanovulture crystal. It's a very heavy crystal in the center of it, and it was just held in the center. So there it was, beautiful, and George and Viola had never seen anything so beautiful. These two eggs, a pink and a blue one, but that had to merge through space in each other, and that they're sitting through each other. And the nanovulture crystal was such a tiny speck, was in the center holding these down, and they were just, oh, so beautiful. And they can't really kiss, because vultures have got these big toucan bills, so they have to, but they were really happy. And then all of a sudden, quack, quack, and then she laid another egg. This one was a blue one. George knew that he was always getting it wrong, so he didn't call out anything. But he saw it, the egg. Sat there, and it wouldn't go in the nest. And Viola knew a trick that she heard at the car club. Because nanovulture ladies, every Tuesday night, go out to card clubs of other nanovulture ladies, and they have big discussion. And she just thought very quickly, and she got her bill and flicked the egg, just twirl, and you could see inside the egg, it had this beautiful sort of line inside it. And she actually had to twist the egg, so it's still beautiful, and no surface, no inside or outside, but it did have this sort of beat line in it. It's hard to say, it's sort of a line. You could see where the egg began to vanish again and then start up again strongly. With this new shape egg, she put that, that egg fell in on top of the other egg. So this is fantastic, an egg, a nest, which is only big enough for one egg, was actually containing three eggs, and because they were special nanovulture eggs without a surface, no inside or outside, they could actually flow through each other. And there were two blues and one pink. And then Viola was just looking at it, and she went, "Meh, meh," and another egg began to come out. and this one was pink. And George said, oh, okay, you've got the same number of blue and pink eggs, not knowing what to say. And then Viola sat there, and much distress, the egg wouldn't go in. And George looked at it and said, why don't you do what the lady vultures, nano vultures, told you to do in that meeting you had on Wednesday night? And Viola said, Wednesday night? I stay at home watching TV on Wednesday night. You mean Tuesday? And she remembered, and she did this twirl with her beak and just changed the shape of the egg a little bit, such that it had sort of like a glowing, more intense part inside it. And lo, it fell inside. And so they looked at amazement. They had four eggs, one nanocrystal, a nanovulture crystal in the centre, very tiny, so small, but it was holding these four eggs together. No surface, no inside, no outside, but just gently gliding into existence and out of existence. They go through magical as they can glide and flow through each other. And look, by and by, there was another squawking, another egg came out, and you can work out what colour it is, but this one, George thought he knew it was going to happen, but this time, Viola got the egg in her beak. He squished it into and rotated it, so it was like an egg, but it was twisted. And she's able to pop that in, and then the neck next came out, and she did the same twist, but this way she had to put the twist sort of 90 degrees around. And then another egg came out, and she laid another egg, put that in, and this way she had to put the twist such that the twist was in the up down thing. But it was still pretty amazing. Four of the circular ones and three of the twists, with the actual twists going in flat, left to right, flat. In front and flat, up and down. You'll get used to know them if you ever go to study this a bit more. And so this happened and happened and happened. And more and more eggs going through. And each time Viola and George had to work out how to twist these eggs. But by and by they were up to 17 eggs. This is absolutely amazing. 17 eggs all in this nanovulture nest, and this is an amazing thing to see. And George was so amazed. He said, I've got that 17 nanocrystal nanovulture crystal in the centre, and it's holding all those eggs together, and all 17 eggs miraculously in the inside. In his mind he could imagine the 17 eggs all laid out, but fortunately he was away. He was able to fit it into such a small nest, and it's just one of the tricks of nanovultures that their eggs can be lively and with no surface, no beginning or end. They glide in and out of existence, into existence and out again, as they go through, and they can slide through each other if you apply the Tuesday night bridge club, Lady Nanovulture's bridge club thing of giving them a little twist with your bill. And that was a thing to go. And George was saying, who's pretty exhausted by this point in time. All the worrying he had to go through watching Viola lay all these eggs. And he said, look, that is absolutely perfect. Because I was able to get this stone of 17. It's the most I could get. And Viola sort of looked at George, a bit starry-eyed, and a bit of a strange look on her face. And George wondered, what are you thinking? What are you thinking, Viola? And then, rack, rack, boop. And out came another egg. And George thought, Will, I hope this egg can go in. And Viola looked at George, and then it was a bit of a struggle, but she cut the egg, put a two little circular spherical folds in it, and then another cut in it, and sort of a vertical cut in it. That's a twist, not a cut. A twist of it, and all lovingly done. And the egg looked so soft, no surface, no beginning or end, gliding into existence and gliding out again, like a ghost. It can just funnel through, and then amazingly, it took a lot. She laid it on top, it thought for a while. Finally, the 18th egg sat there. It was very big. It didn't shrink down. It was very big. And there she sat there. This proud nether vulture. And inside their nest, sitting inside their nest, the size of one egg, was 18 nether vulture eggs. Each egg pretty much the same size as the other. And because they had no surface, no inside or out, gliding into existence and out again, you couldn't put anything on top of it. You had to have one of these nether vulture crystals. It's in the center, very small, very, very heavy, much heavier than George, much heavier than Viola, much heavier than all the eggs, really intensely heavy, sitting in the center. But it was there, and that meant the wind could blow, but that little egg was 18 eggs there. And they were so proud, looking up there, and there were 9 pink eggs and 9 blue eggs, and they were just so happy that they had actually made this beautiful, beautiful egg. And that's the story of making a chlorine ion. Friends, sorry to upset you too much. So story here is, rather than saying, telling you what an electron is like, or you've been told it's like, and saying it's not like this, what I'm doing in this particular story is saying what a quantum electron is like. So a quantum electron can have spin up or spin down. They can be pink or red. And this is just to do with an angular momentum symmetry. In the creation of the universe, in the Big Bang, our universe actually coalesced into two universes superimposed on each other, a spin-up universe and a spin-down universe. So what it means is that these two electrons, spin-up, spin-down, can actually coexist on top of each other in space. So at the start, you've got the pure electron and this pure down electron. And going back to the story of Viola and George looking at their egg when they were just two electrons sitting there, and it was absolutely perfectly, that's a helium atom with two electrons in it, spin up, spin down, perfectly, perfectly symmetrical. There is no angular aspect to a helium atom, and for me, a helium atom is absolutely perfect. And it goes through, and for each two electrons, you have to find a new way of folding it. And at the time where they had four electrons, it was beryllium. And that is true, that the last electron, the last two electrons, identical, have this, if you could look through it, sort of like a misty sphere floating inside it. And you can actually look through them, and they don't have any surfaces. And you've got this amazing thing. Now, it is also true in quantum mechanics that you have this formula that really basically the size is proportional to 1m. If you just put that spatial differential and say, well, does the size of the sort of wavelength and the on the other side, you look and you cancel out, there's a mass in there of the actual particle or whatever, it's not really a particle, the thing, and that's on the bottom line. So if something's smaller, it is bigger. So indeed, we go in this world, this minor world, you have this thing of no surfaces, no inside or out, and also the smaller, the less massive it is, the bigger it is. Now, that just to get you an idea, pretty much the biggest particle going through you at the moment is a neutrino. It's got almost no mass, but if you were to hold it still in your palm, it would probably be the size of a grape. This is a fundamental particle that size, pretty large. Now, one of the things that happens is that when you fire a particle, a quantum mechanical particle, it changes shape and goes long and thin and needle-like. And this is when you fire electrons, they become smaller in the direction that you're firing the bullet, and they go needle-like. So that they actually change shape. Now this is so true, and so much so that you can actually make quite, if you really speed up an electron, you can make a very long one, and actually a single electron, you can actually crimp it and get it to laze. A single electron can actually produce light, laser light. It's a pretty amazing thing to go through. Now, as we build up the point where got the egg and bit through it with her bill and actually twisted it, that's aluminium to go through. And so we've gone through. And what happens in real life is that rather than a big nucleus and everything going in, you find a nucleus and the number of electrons which can be held there is by the size of this nanovolt crystal as it goes through. Now, we go up here, and the point that I'm sort of making is that an atom is a size, but its components by themselves have a far greater volume than the final volume. It packs in very small. And to do this, I've discussed a nest, because everyone thinks, oh, a nest, an egg's got to fit in it. Oh, it can't do it. It gives the idea. And I suppose the reason I picked up vultures and egg laying stuff in that people is sort of like a cognitive storage of eggs, stores in poor old viola going across there. And the idea that rather than getting you to remember that, it's actually remembered in the nanovulture. And I suppose the other point is to try the nanovultures, small, just to get you thinking of really, really small things, things to get in here. But we wind up with the final mystery of not nanovultures, but of how you can get 18 eggs with your crystal only being able to hold 17. eggs. Now, this is really where people can say, oh, what's the benefit of this? And look, the benefit is just enormous, absolutely enormous, because this fluffy egg idea expands to proteins and nanobots, explains to your whole self, explains what you're standing on. You're standing on these nano eggs which can't be compressed. You're standing on a froth of atoms. So there's so many aspects to it, but the really amazing stuff is the 18. So 17 is the atomic number of chlorine, and 17 weight nanocrystal stone in the center. If that's 17, every atom of that is a chlorine atom. But if it's got the wrong number of eggs in there, it's a charged one. So if there's 17, it's Cl, and it's just equal. If it's got 16 eggs or electrons in, it's actually got a positive charge over it, so it's Cl plus, and you can have definitely Cl pluses and stuff like that, especially if they get ripped off by oxygen and other things like that. However, the what we've got is Cl minus. Now, Cl minus, I hate to tell you, is stable. It's actually rather stable. Cl minus is in common table salt. It's inside you. Most of the chlorine, in fact, all the chlorine in you, is in this more stable form of chlorine, the iron form of chlorine. Amazing, isn't it? So that given your non-nanovulture way of describing things, this is a thing that somehow you go across. Now, the thing is that Cl minus is more stable. Now, the ability to add that last egg in and form the iron is called electron affinity. In fact, atoms are more stable, most stable, not with the same number of electrons, but with one more electron. Sometimes they're not much more stable, or no more stable at all, and they've got an electron affinity of zero. So you've got nitrogen, a few noble gases like that. But most atoms are more stable with one extra electron. And this is because it's quantum mechanics, my friend. Now, what it means is that that when it's got there, the electrons have been cut and folded by Viola. And this is in her bill. She has twisted it and pulled it across. And as it's sitting there, you can still see that nanocrystal from one side. So if you're very careful where that nanocrystal is exposed, you can still push your electron in there. And so Cl minus is stable. In fact, it gives off its... really likes the electron, and the Cl minus has that greatest electron affinity, and that gives off a lot of energy. And this is really, really important because you want to, it takes energy to remove an electron, right? Which is okay, so in any chemical reaction where ions are formed, you're going to remove electrons, so you're going to have to spend some energy doing it. But when they gain electrons, it gains an extra electron, forms an ion, it gives extra energy. So all of chemistry, almost all of chemistry, inorganic chemistry, the formation of ions, rely upon this beautiful thing that these eggs, if you like chlorine style eggs, give out a huge amount of energy and actually rip off the electron from something else. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So these are the things that people are, I suppose, so brutal and so aggressive. Well, I've found that in my life, that they don't even stop. They don't ever even listen. In fact, rather than actually listening, or they're formulating something nasty to tell you, something to put you down, nasty to put you down, and something that it's almost like putting their hands on top of the ears and going, la 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 la, that's what I was taught. I can't believe that I wasn't taught the nanovulture, the nanovulture story. And bit by bit, they come up and they reach the Schrodinger wave equation. And it's sort of like two stories as to why. It's the, one is the understand sort of the static one, and the other one is the sort of dynamic, what's happening in a dynamic equation. But they're look, in my experience, majority of people, in fact, everyone, I think I'll probably, there's one or two people who don't understand, and they know they don't understand, they're respectful and quiet, but the majority of people are just so, so wed on what they've learnt in primary school, which or junior high school, that the electron, that it's a flat, the atom is a flat affair, with tiny little dots, and it's so easy for the teacher to draw. And of course, you can imagine, you might be able to imagine this podcast, but it's not an easy thing to draw. And there's not one universe, but two universes. There's not, things aren't, as Teacher College told you, that you can explain everything by physical models. It's not a physical model. You have something for which there is nothing out there like it. There is none. There's none of these things which doesn't have a surface. Doesn't have. If you hold an apple, there's definitely a worm inside the apple and stuff like that. You don't have any of these nanovulture eggs. They're not out there. And the result has been that people, I've really never been able to stop explain to people, and I've sort of understood this, but it's only when I've written this research paper and really, really getting into the research paper, I've had to slowly get in, stop, scrap, 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 move across, move out, move a bit of translation, one translation at one level. So the problem is, once you start translating things, you have to really translate it at multiple levels, and the research paper is really not the device for doing it. So at this stage, you come up and you get involved trying to explain why a completely mad stream of consciousness explanation, which is not supported by equations but which has got huge cultural currency. So it's the value of the other one is that if you pass an exam, you get a credentialed and you get money. So, of course, people believe what they get money on, and it gives them entitlement. If you learn the Bohr atom, that's great. You're fully qualified to teach some other poor sucker the same thing. And as a human race, it's, I think we specialize in doing stupid things to other people, and if someone stands up and says love one another, or is a Mother Teresa type of stuff, he says not thinking about the poor, we're not, that doesn't get as much press time as someone who says, the polls are going wrong, I know, I'm going to suddenly talk about buying Greenland, try and be the clown. I think we, as a human race, when you look at it, specialise at clubbing each other over the head and spending hours, so much time doing it. So let's hear it for George and Viola. I don't know why G and V. I absolutely don't know. I wanted something which wasn't. I don't know. But it is. I did want to have male and female involved in it. A bit of the story. I wanted to have a bit of fantasy. I wanted to have a bit of storage of ideas. Not in cognitive memory. So that is, it was something that you could imagine and internalize and think it's going to go from inside my head to the outside. You've got to formulate that wave function in your head, and then you've got to lay it as an egg across it. Hopefully, no surface, no inside or outside, just gliding in and out. Like this beautiful ghost. And that's truly what quantum mechanical wave functions are like. And it's this thing that we really have to do. And we can train our kids to do so much with nursery rhymes and stories and stuff like that. And so that will happen, I think, in the very first part of the research paper, in that I've sort of described what the utility box is very briefly, and then said, you know, what problem does it solve? And then it does solve one problem, but it doesn't really address, as it is just by itself, the story of the teacher. Look, teachers can and do, and have always, and every teacher I've encountered, convinced themselves they don't need to understand quantum mechanics, they don't need to listen to you, they don't need maths. You know, we've used maths to describe what's going on, we've used maths to make computers, atomic bombs and stuff like that, but when it comes to it, you can't expect them to use maths. Well, unfortunately, I don't expect you to, but nature does expect you to use maths. And in a certain sense, it's a violation of the actual principle of doing experiments and letting nature testify. Put nature in the witness box and ask it questions. Can you do this or that? As well, an experiment is. However, it's this dreadful conspiracy, a lie, which has been told, and people haven't put nature in the witness box, even though we've run a forensic test on nature and have basically got its story. And its story is when it really comes down to it, is the Schrodinger wave equation, which basically says this squiggliness is equal to the sort of energy deficit. If you make something more massive or you try and hold it, the more squiggly it gets. And it's this way to do it, and the fundamental thing is that we, in doing quantum mechanics, I'm sort of doing this, I'm coming home now from this talk, quantum mechanics, there's this awesome view that you know, people desperately didn't want to do things with numbers. Somehow they really didn't want to do it. And then there was a realization that the description of an electron is a number. And the number a wave function is a number. And that is, it's a scalar, I suppose it's a scalar field. That is, a field, it's got a value at multiple points in space. It's not point light, but for every point of space, it's got a value. And that basically, like you have a single number, a telephone number, like a vector, or you have a book of numbers, a whole telephone, old telephone book of numbers. And then you can shrink that down, and those numbers can correspond to the actual things. So a wave function itself is a number. However, it's not restricted to being a counting number. That is, numbers which I get from everyday transaction. So human transactions occur basically on with counting numbers. So I've got $1 million in the bank. I owe 56 cents to so-and-so. They're counting numbers. However, the numbers of quantum mechanics are algebraic numbers. That is, things like the number, the square root of minus 2. They've got an imaginary component in it. They're algebraic. Now, this is that they... the numbers solve a problem, and the problem is it can have numbers outside of it. So what two numbers can I multiply to get together to get minus 56 cents or minus 64 cents, minus 8 cents, minus I cents, sorry, I ate and like that, and that goes into it. So the things with those eggs is to actually test or see whether it is. You have to actually multiply it out. You can realize it. This is beautiful complexity there, and the complexity is there, and you know, that's the level. And the bottom line is that if you're a teacher and you're teaching the Bohr atom, and you're not teaching and whatever you teach you can do, but if you sit down and do a quantum physics exam and you want to calculate an energy level, you know, how much light comes out of something, you could try as much as you like to draw an electron on a page and work out where it goes and try to hop it. Or you can say it's one nano egg and another nano egg, and it's got to go from one to the other and work out the dipole transition moment and work out how much that change actually oscillates space. And I suppose that's another aspect to it here. In the blackboard, the blackboard with electrons and protons in it exists in a void, which is different from existing in space. So space actually kicks back or reacts to changes. It's got a springiness of space. So if you have an electron, it's sort of oscillating and moving, it gets sprung. It gets sprung back. And if you transition from one vibration mode to another with a different frequency, that moving from one to another occurs at a certain rate and actually oscillates space, and space takes energy. Space gets energized. So light is actually energized space. Okay, so there's energy within an atom. That energy of the atom gets transferred into space. It doesn't form another object, a squiggly object. The space itself is light. So light has particle properties. That is, if you've got this score sheet for a light, a piece of light, it's got properties which are like a particle, but itself What it physically looks like is space which has been stretched and contracted because space reacts to electric field. That's the difference between space and blackboards, and so those go together. So that's one of these things. So it's one of these things that I suppose the assumption, the aggressive assumption of shut up, you quantum physicists, go away. I'm getting your pay packet and all this type of stuff. Just go off. There's the assumption that when you slammed the door on a quantum physicist and said, yeah, no more, you haven't just slammed the door on electrons and atoms and understanding what things are. You slammed the door on also understanding about space and how things operate. And this is without doing anything at all or sufficiently complex with it. We haven't gone into Fourier analysis or anything like that. We've already done. And what has eventually happened, I suppose, is that for all that wrangling and political stuff, there's sort of a calm come across, and I really hope that this story makes it across of George, Viola, Nana Vultures, and their 18 eggs sitting on a 17 egg holding nanovulture crystal in the center, there's that aspect. The one, I can always ring for one or more electron, and this is amazing. And the fundamental idea of quantum mechanics that small things are big, and big things are small. No surface, no inside, no outside. Easing in and out of existence. That's a real way to get it. So thanks a lot for listening. I'll get home to bed and see how things go. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.